Welcome to I Run Radio. Coming up, a chance encounter on a plane leads to a meaningful marathon.
She said when she was running that she would repeat to herself, you know, you can do it, you can do it, you can get through it. And the idea of the marathon as being something that demonstrates something that you can do took on such a tremendous kind of personal, almost spiritual meaning for me.
A running community welcomes a new member and changes his life.
At that time, I was pretty fresh out of grad school and not feeling very well about myself or the future. And we're here 4 years later, two marathons later, a career that I love is in place, a person that I can see in the mirror that I love is in place, and I don't think that was the case before I started running here in Toronto and finding this community, so it's been a really wonderful thing for me.
And Ray Zahab returns from another amazing running expedition.
It's a huge canyon. You know, it resembles the Grand Canyon. We crossed that, and that was like a rim-to-rim, 38K straight, unsupported. It took us from sunrise to sunset. It was so gnarly just to get that distance done, you know, dropping straight down into the canyon on sheer rock.
All of that and more coming up on iRun Radio. We're joined now by iRun's editor and general manager, Ben Kaplan. Hi, Ben.
Hey there.
How are you this week?
Yeah, I'm just feeling terrific. Thanks very much.
We have a great show coming up this week. We're going to talk to this woman. I'm really glad I connected with her, Erin McLeod. She wrote a piece in the Globe and Mail, and it's just one of those really, really cool stories. First of all, she was really struggling to overcome the fact that she learned she couldn't have kids. She couldn't start a family. And she meets this woman on the plane, and I don't want to spoil the story because she tells it so well, but it's a chance encounter with somebody on an airplane, and that leads her that day to sign up for her very first marathon. So
wow.
It's just an incredible story. And also on the show, we're going to welcome back Ray Zahab.
He's home.
Yeah, Ray is back from Namibia in southern Africa, where he was doing another one of these crazy, incredible, inspiring expeditions and encountering all kinds of obstacles and dealing with all sorts of logistics and running 50, 60, 70, 80 kilometers a day. Just an incredible, incredible guy. And Ray's going to share some stories from that trip with us today.
I was following Ray's his exploits over social media, and you got to ask him how he's managed to find the fountain of youth. He looks terrific.
It's all that running, I guess, and it's all that being outdoors and in Africa. The air is good there, I guess. I don't know.
Unbelievable! And his muscles, his forearms. I never noticed he was so strong.
Yeah,
incredible.
What he puts his body through, though, and the preparation that he has to do. We always talk about this because. You think, okay, he's got to train, he's got to get in shape for it, but he's got to sort out so many other things too.
That's right.
You know, who's going to be where? Who's going to be filming it? Where is he going to get his food? And how many calories is he going to take in every day? Because over these long expeditions, you could lose a ton of weight and have no energy left if you're not careful. You've got to be ingesting thousands and thousands of calories and certain kinds of calories, fat and carbohydrates and that kind of thing, to be in shape to run again the next day. And he's got to sort all of that out in advance. It's an incredible planning exercise.
He's really a unique character. It's just so great to have him part of the family. And he's got such a fun personality, too. He doesn't take himself, he takes what he does.
He's hilarious.
Advice. Yeah, this was your advice, too, about take the running seriously, but don't take yourself too seriously, something like that. He does that to a T.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'll never forget, he did this run one time where he ran from Montreal to Ottawa, which is about 180, 200 kilometers. And I joined him for the last 30 or 40 kilometers of that. I met him partway. And, of course, that's just a long run for me. It's the kind of run I do training for a marathon. It's not 200 kilometers running for 24 hours. But he and his brother, John Zahab, who's a terrific runner as well, they start in Montreal, they run all the way to Ottawa, and then we get all the way downtown Ottawa, we finish this run, and Ray takes off his shoe, and I mean, he's got a blister that is the size of a, you know, it's almost the size of an apple, you know? It's like 2 inches across, this massive, massive blister, and he's probably run 50 kilometers with this thing on his foot, and that's just what he does.
Yuck.
Yeah. Now, speaking of wonderful people who are part of the family. You introduced me to Ravi Singh, who's been doing some writing for us, and he's going to be on the show today as well. And this is a cool story, too, because it's about how he kind of found his place in the world in the running community.
Yeah, it's much like that first woman, too. I mean, these stories, who had that chance to count on the airplane, these stories always mean so much more when people, have their worlds open up with the sport that we love, and they take from it, so much more than like a jazzy new stretch or a way to get 10 seconds off their 10K. But yeah. Yet, they learn about themselves and unlock their potential. It's just terrific. And Ravi's stuff, too, is just that he infuses his work with that sort of like, I'm sure it comes across in the conversation, but that sort of, that open-hearted, just good vibe.
Yeah,
he feels very appreciative of the sport and the people that he talks to.
But you're so right. It's all about how running intersects with your life. It's not really about getting faster or shaving seconds off your time. I mean, that stuff is all great, but it's all about what the running brings to your life and the perspective and how it changes the way you think about things. That's, to me, the real story and where the real benefit is.
For sure. I mean, because the races, it's never over. I mean, we're always racing. There's always another one. So if somehow you're not enjoying the prep and the day-to-day of the thing, what are you...
There is no finish line, right? That was on the cover of the magazine once.
Yeah, I love that. I know. It just goes on. And thank goodness. I mean, because ultimately there is one, and that's... No coming back from that.
Yeah. Let's not get too philosophical here. All right. Ben, thank you so much for joining us once again this week.
I appreciate it very much.
That's Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, how a conversation with a stranger on a plane led one woman to run her first marathon. Discover the Pentathlon des Neiges, presented by MEC, the world's biggest winter multisport with 6,000 participants on the historical Plains of Abraham. It's also for you. Visit pentathlondesneiges.com. Welcome back to iRun Radio. iRun Radio is on the air every Sunday morning on 1310 News in Ottawa. You can also listen to the podcast and check out past editions of the show at irun.ca. Just click on radio. Our first guest is a writer and teacher in Montreal who has a very powerful story about why she runs. Erin McLeod wrote an article for the Globe and Mail about what running meant to her when she discovered that she couldn't have children. And it involves a great story about meeting another runner on a plane who inspired her to sign up for a marathon. Erin, welcome to iRun Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell me a little bit about how this story begins. When you tell the story in the Globe and Mail, you talk about your Auntie Claire, and I guess she kind of sparked an interest in you very early on, although you didn't take it up until much later.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was of the, I call it sort of like the I can't run crowd, not even I won't run or I don't want to, but really that I just felt like I couldn't. And my Auntie Claire, she has been very involved in sport, amateur sport, both through her career as well as, she's an instructor, fitness instructor. She ran a number of marathons. She was quite high level, very quite speedy, I would say, in comparison to my running. But she always would say to me, like, yes, you can run, you just need to start out slow and recognize that it's the kind of thing that takes time. There's a lot of patience involved, and I just think that I wasn't really, earlier in my life, I don't think I had the kind of patience or even the kind of drive to be able to take her advice and kind of work on running as a project.
And then something changed, and I guess this happened while you were in Jamaica. So many running stories start in Jamaica, but not for people like you and me. More typically, it's for an Olympic sprinter when we hear about a running story in Jamaica. But what happened that caused you to start running?
Well, up the street from where I was living, there was this absolutely stunning reservoir known in Kingston, Jamaica as the Dam. This reservoir was like an oasis, and it really kind of struck me like, hey, you know, I would walk around it, but then I'd see people running, people of different ages, people of different shapes and sizes, and men, women, whatever, all there. Just kind of, there was such a peaceful, meditative element to it. So I decided to finally take my aunt's advice and start running. And then I did the Reggae Marathon, not the marathon, but I did a 10K after my first year. And that was the first race that I'd ever done. And it was just so much fun and being around a lot of people. So I started doing these 10Ks. And then I also found that doing 10Ks, because then I moved to Costa Rica for a job, it helped me to get to know the city. So there were all of these kind of bonus reasons that I got for running. And then when I decided to move back, I finished the job in Costa Rica, I'd finished in Jamaica, I moved back to Montreal and really had thought that this would be my time to start a family. I'd had the opportunity to stay and live in Jamaica, but it really seemed like, you know, well, if you want to start a family, Canada and Quebec is such a great place to be with all of, you know, maternity benefits and things like that. And that's when I ran kind of, not to use the word, I ran headlong into the wall of infertility. And that is when the running took on even a deeper meaning.
Yeah. Now, just before we talk about that, you wrote about the fact that when you started running, it was not easy. And I think that's the barrier for a lot of people that they need to overcome. The first few weeks of becoming a runner, maybe even the first few months, it's not that fun. Running is hard.
Well, no, I say to people, you know, when I'm in conversation, they always say, oh, you must love running. I actually don't. You know, I mean, yes, the first few weeks was especially difficult, but even now, the first few kilometers, the first 5 kilometers, I really find almost impossible, that every step, apart from my mind, my body is saying, you really don't want to do this. Please just stop, just start walking. You really don't want to. But it's the exhilaration of being able to push through that and to be able to say, you know what? My body can actually do this, and I can make it past those first 5 kilometers, and I can keep going. And there is a point that I'll get to where I'll feel comfortable.
There's a great lesson in that, absolutely. Now, turning back to your story, you learned when you came back to Canada and you had the intention of starting a family that that wasn't possible. You weren't going to be able to have kids. And and how did running take on a deeper meaning at that point? You tell the story of how you're sitting on the plane next to a woman. You go on a trip, and she says that because she can run a marathon, she feels like she can do anything.
Well, I was going to Costa Rica to work on a Habitat for Humanity project. I've done work as a volunteer team leader with Habitat for Humanity for over a decade. I've led over a dozen trips to different places in the world. And this woman was sitting next to me, and she was going to do a placement for a social work degree. And she was in her late 60s. And I said, oh, well, that's really interesting that you're taking this social work degree. And she said, well, I mean, I had always wanted to take a degree. She was a person who had become an accountant. She was an accountant for in Hollywood, actually. She'd been to the Oscars. She had all these wonderful stories. And she said that her and her husband had left California and they'd moved to Iowa. And then their relationship broke up at that point. And it was very devastating for her. And she remembered, though, in her mind that even though, you know, things were difficult, that she knew that she could get through it because she could run a marathon. And I said, oh, wow, that's interesting. I just recently, over the past few years, you know, had started distance running. And then we started talking about it and why you run and how it is difficult, but you keep going. And that's when she told me, you know, she said, well, you know, if you can run a marathon, I mean, you can pretty much do anything. That was her attitude. It was the thing in her life that allowed her to feel that way and, you know, had informed her decision to go back to school at the age of, I think she went back to school at the age of 65, you know, to take something that she'd always wanted to take and to get the degree that she always wanted to have. And she's a very inspirational, positive person. And it just really resonated with me. It made me realize that, hey, this might be something that could help me deal with this very recent, difficult news that I'd received. And what was interesting is that after signing up for the marathon the very same day, then I was working with these volunteers from all across Canada, and I found myself being able to open up to them when we were talking about ourselves, about this recent news that I'd received. And their acceptance of me was really powerful too. And it all kind of came from this sort of decision to think about the potential of myself, my body, what I could do, and the way that running could kind of inform that. But, you know, she said when she was running, that she would repeat to herself, you know, you can do it, you can do it, you can get through it. And the idea of the marathon as being something that demonstrates something that you can do took on such a tremendous kind of personal, almost spiritual meaning for me, because one thing that I can tell you is that, you know, when you go online and you look for things like infertility support, you know, on Facebook, look for Facebook groups, or, you know, you do a Google search, there are support groups out there, but so much of it is about solving your problem. You know, oh, well, if you are experiencing infertility, here's a new test you can take. Here's a new procedure you can go through. Here's a new set of ways that makes adoption more accessible. Like, it's about solving the problem, and it's not necessarily approaching this, what I really needed, which was a sense of acceptance of myself as being a whole human being, just as I am. And that really kind of that sort of level of self-acceptance for me was accessible through running.
Yeah, that's very well said. Now, this woman, this was a total stranger on the plane, right? This was
absolutely
somebody you just happened to sit next to.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, she told me her name, and, you know, you say, okay, yeah, I really need to remember this person's name. And then as soon as we said, you know, farewell, I don't know, it went out of my head, but everything she said was so resonant that I mean, as I say in the piece, it's true, I registered for the marathon right then. And this was in around July. I mean, I think I'd done three half marathons that year. So I was kind of, I think, in okay stead to work towards an October marathon, but not great. So, I mean, my training was not as long as I would have wanted it to be now. I'm working towards the Ottawa Marathon in May, but it pushed me towards doing it. And even though I did not run a very fast marathon, I finished in 5 hours, and I injured myself about 10 kilometers to the end, so I had to walk a bit, but I finished it. And so,
good for you.
It really was so important.
So what has running come to mean for you?
I think that what running means to me is it's a constant reminder that I, as a person, that I'm enough, that, you know, that there are things that I can do. And even if there are things that I can't do, that I'm still enough. And I have found ways to accept myself and my abilities and my body's abilities and things that my body is as being whole and complete just as I am. And that, to me, that's really what running has done for me. I mean, I could understand for other people. There's a range of different abilities that human beings have. And so there could be other things that might be meaningful to people, but I think that the message for me that running specifically has provided is just that idea that I'm enough just as I am.
Well, Erin, it's a very inspiring story, and you wrote it so powerfully in that article in the Globe and Mail. I really appreciate you joining us on I Run Radio. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thank you ever so much for having me. And my Auntie Claire will be thrilled that yet another time she's on something or something.
Yeah.
She's so thrilled about that.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Good for Auntie Claire. Right on.
Yeah.
That's Erin McLeod, a writer and teacher in Montreal. Coming up next, how the running community embraced a new member and changed his life.
Canada's longest running marathon, the Scotiabank Calgary Marathon, is a challenging, competitive, and fun event with a race designed for everyone of any level. Register now at calgarymarathon.com and experience the vibrancy of Calgary on May 27th. Ravi Singh is a runner who contributes regularly to iRun magazine, and he has a great story of how the running community welcomed him and gave him a place where he felt like he belonged. Ravi, thank you for joining us on iRun Radio.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And it's great to have you on the iRun team as well. I know Ben speaks very highly of you, and you've been doing lots of stuff for us.
Yeah, I've been doing some columns in the print magazine and blogging on the website for just over a year now, and I've been having a lot of fun doing it. So it's good to hear that Ben is enjoying the work as well.
And I gather that in running, you have found a home of sorts. You've found a community that that has welcomed you, and you feel you belong to now. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think I might even go so far as to say I never really had that sense of belonging in my life before I started to run. The Toronto running community is large and diverse as the city itself, and it's been an incredible place for me to find a home. I first started the group running with Tribe Fitness. They're based out of the Fort York neighborhood here in Toronto, run by Heather Gardner. It's grown a lot over the years, gone from a little Saturday run group to its own studio now. So I started running with them, I'd say, I think it was in 2014 when I was training for my first Around the Bay. And at that time, I was pretty fresh out of grad school, not feeling very well about myself or the future. And we're here 4 years later, two marathons later, a career that I love is in place, a person that I can see in the mirror that I love is in place, and I don't think that was the case before I started running here in Toronto and finding this community. So
wow,
it's been a really wonderful thing for me.
That's great. I'm really glad to hear that. Now, what got you into running in the first place?
Well, as I mentioned, I was fresh out of grad school when I started running with Tribe Fitness here in Toronto. But it was in grad school itself. I was at Queen's University in the Department of Political Studies. I was doing my master's, and I wasn't doing well. Physically, mentally, I didn't feel well. I definitely was in the worst shape of my life. Kind of felt like I had no direction. And I remember having a moment telling myself, you have to do something. And there were a lot of things that needed to be done, that still need to be done. I mean, every one of us as a person, as an athlete, is a work in progress. But one of the things I decided to do was that I was going to go for a run. I was living right down by the water, and Kingston has a pretty gorgeous waterfront, and I was constantly seeing people run and cycle by. So I decided one day to put on the crummy pair of running shoes I had, throw on my basketball shorts and a hoodie, and go about 2K out to the prison and back, the famous Kingston Pen. That was about 4 kilometers. I walked most of it, but it stuck somehow, and that was kind of the start of this addiction and passion.
Yeah, and it is both of those things to many of us. So tell me about the marathons that you've run.
So the first one came in 2014. That was also the year of my first Around the Bay. So, I mean, you ran 30K and you survived, you may as well go up to 42. So the first one that I ran was here in Toronto, the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon. And, of course, it was wonderful. It's my hometown race. It was a race I got to run with the people I've been running with here in Toronto.
Right.
With all the friends I'd made, we got to share that experience together. Many of us were doing our first marathon that day. So, again, having that shared experience is brilliant. And it was also the year I got to participate in the Digital Champions program. So through blogging, I got to document my journey a little bit and got to share in others' journeys a little bit as well, which made it, you know, an even more special experience. And of course, I think anybody who's run that race, who's run here in Toronto, knows what a community-driven race it is. And I mean, I personally can't say enough good about Alan Brooks and Canada Running Series and the experience they create through that race.
It's a great event, and they're a great group for sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the next one came the next year in 2015 in Chicago. So
wow.
Only two marathons, but I have done a world major. I can at least claim that.
Yeah.
And it was with a contingent of the Tribe Fitness group. We all went down to Chicago together and did that race.
And Chicago is a pretty neat city to visit, and the marathon is a pretty cool one to do. It starts and finishes downtown, and you get to see a lot of the city and the architecture. It's a pretty special one.
Yeah, it's almost just like a neighborhood tour. It's a perfect sightseeing race, and it's an amazing course, and that there's crowd support all the way through. And I have no issue in admitting that I'm a back of the pack runner. Still kind of identify myself that way, and even as I was coming in, you know, well past the time the first corral would have come in, even, you know, at 40K near the finish line, the streets were still lined with people, you know, cheering all the runners on. It's wonderful because the city embraces and loves that race, not just the people running it. Everyone around, when they see you with your medal, they're congratulating you, they're welcoming you to their city. So that makes it, again, another way that it's an extremely special race.
Yeah. And I understand you've met some of your running heroes during the time that you've been writing for the magazine.
Yeah, it's one of the things that makes, I think, running a very unique sport. I have a lot of friends who play hockey. I don't think they've ever met Sidney Crosby or been on the ice with him. I don't think any of my friends who play basketball have been on the court with LeBron James, but just this past Sunday, I got to run a few kilometers with Lee Coolsett, a little bit with Krista Duchesne.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's really incredible how, you know, our heroes, the people we look up to, they're incredibly accessible and humble and always willing to give you their time and a little bit of advice. They see us all as kind of being the same and just sharing the same passion. So it's really great. It's almost like a free education in running that I get through this experience with iRun. I just get to talk to somebody like Eric Gillis or Rachel Hanna and say, so how do you train? How do you deal with this? How do you deal with this barrier? And as I'm putting together a piece with them, it's at the same time I'm learning from the absolute best in the game.
Yeah, that's very cool. And what do you like to write about? I understand you write in the latest issue about traveling alone. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that particular article, Ben and I had discussed, he wanted to explore the idea of getting Canadians to run more in their own backyard. And we have a very big backyard, right? And I mentioned we went to Chicago one year as a little group, the same group I run with here. We had a contingent go to Paris as well. I believe it was in 2015, though I wasn't part of that group. Now this year we have a group going to Berlin. And everybody's always saying, let's throw our name into the New York lottery. Let's throw our name into the Berlin or Chicago lottery. But never say, hey, let's get a group together and go to Winnipeg or go to Regina and run that race. So I wanted to write about why maybe we should give that idea a little bit more thought and maybe should explore our own backyard a little bit more. So I wrote about going to Vancouver in 2016 when I did the Seaweeds Half Marathon and how it was just a magical experience because we connected with runners there. I landed on my own, didn't really know what I was getting myself into, and that evening the Vancouver Running Company, they had their summer social event, which was a little about 10K run, followed by just a social gathering, and all of a sudden I felt at home because I was surrounded by so many other runners.
Wow.
So you think you're going to experience a city in one way. You think you might experience Regina a certain way, and I know, okay, I'm from Toronto, and I think we know what Torontonians might think about going to a place like Regina, but the city you think you're going to experience may not be that. It's going to probably be so much richer if you can connect with runners there. It's a universal language.
What has running come to mean for you then, Ravi? I get the sense it has it means a lot, doesn't it?
I would say it means everything. And I was asked this question the other day actually by a coworker, and I'm not one of those people who's going to say, oh, it fixed everything in my life. It turned everything around. All I had to do was lace up and all of a sudden everything was better. It's not the cure-all. I think that's an unrealistic view. But I do look at it as kind of an integral, you know, Jenga block within the whole structure. When I look at the fact that I'm pursuing my passion in writing with iRun and hopefully telling some great stories that people enjoy, when I look at the fact that I have a career outside of that too that I enjoy, and the fact that I have a certain direction and community in my life that was lacking, I really feel you pull that one Jenga block that's running out. I don't know that the rest stay up or stay in place. That's really how I've come to see it. So it means everything, but ultimately now I do it just because I love the act itself. I love putting one foot in front of the other. I love seeing new neighborhoods in my city getting out there. I love just lacing up and going.
Well, good for you, Ravi. I'm so impressed with the way you describe it and the perspective you have on running, and how you've used running to change your life. I'm very impressed. Thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much, Mark.
That's Ravi Singh, who's one of the contributors to iRun. Coming up next, Raise Ahab. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend, May 26th and 27th, with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge. Four races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. iRun's runner-in-chief Ray Zahab is back from another incredible expedition for impossible to possible. This time he was running in Namibia in southern Africa. Ray, it's great to talk to you again. How you doing?
I am crispy burnt from the Namibian desert, but I'm home.
Crispy burnt, like a strip of
winter,
bacon.
You know?
Yeah.
100 degrees difference, it feels like, but no.
I'm sure.
I feel fantastic. Just glad to be home. Always love coming home, and yeah, you know, feel fantastic.
Yeah. So tell me about the whole experience. And there's so many different angles to this, including some of the obstacles and the challenges you faced while you were there, which is always part of these expeditions. But just walk us through what the running was like, what the environment was like, and how it went for you.
Well, you know, Mark, it's interesting. I think in a lot of ways, because we spent the last, close to 2 years, year and a half, 2 years, sort of planning this, Stefano and I, that, you know, we really were ready to expect the unexpected. I mean, our brains were programmed to go in there and know that probably nothing was going to be what we think it is, even though everything was so well planned out, and that was exactly the case. I mean, you know, you can predict temperatures. We certainly didn't predict in the south for it to reach close to 50 degrees a few days. We crossed the north arm of Fish River Canyon out of the national park that's there. It's a huge canyon. You know, it resembles the Grand Canyon. People can look it up on the internet. It's beautiful, beautiful place. Anyhow, we crossed that, and that was like a rim to rim, 38K straight, unsupported. It took us from sunrise to sunset. It was so gnarly just to get that distance done. You know, dropping straight down into the canyon on sheer rock walls. You can see it, videos of it on my Facebook page. So, I mean, that was unexpected, but it saved us tremendous overall distance on the expedition, because otherwise we would have had to go all the way around, which would have meant 150 or something extra kilometers. So it was all of these sorts of things in the beginning that sort of set the tone for the expedition. I mean, you know, some of the predictables were the satellite. Obviously, we were able to communicate the expedition and every day on the expedition to schools that we were creating content for, or social media, so that people at home could follow along. And then, you know, there was these transitionary pieces through the desert from the Skeleton Coast where things cooled down dramatically, but it rained on us. And then in the north, where in these off-road sections that we were on, navigating wildlife was actually like a concern, you know, because it's lion country, so you got to be careful.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a whole mix of sort of unexpected. So I think, you know, it was our favorite parts were obviously being in the wilderness and navigating those long sections that we were sort of basically drawing straight lines through the desert and then reconnecting with our team, either on a 4x4 track or on a gravel road. and then making our way. As a matter of fact, you'll find this interesting. In the whole roughly 2,000 K that we ran, it's somewhere between 1,800 and 2,000. I got to get the exact data from border to border, more or less. There was 20 kilometers of pavement. So, I mean, there was...
Wow.
It was really a neat... the last time I experienced anything like that was in the Gobi, you know? And so it really was a great way to take in such an amazing country, you know?
Yeah. And tell me more, Ray, about the scenery and what you saw, what you witnessed, because I know to people who have never been to Africa, when you say Africa, you sort of picture certain things. And I know you've spent so much time there in so many different places that you would differentiate between what you've seen in the Sahara and the Gobi Desert in Namibia elsewhere. There's so many different elements to what makes up the landscape there.
Well, the Namib Desert, you know, the Sahara obviously was 7,500 K, and pretty, you know, it was pretty consistent. Whereas the Namib Desert was anything but. I mean, it was like everything that you would expect when you picture Africa, the continent of Africa, and you're picturing the wildlife, and there's rhinos there, and there's giraffes. We'd be running, you know, cross country, and there'd be giraffes and zebras. I mean, you just see them there. You know, the oryx were everywhere, and there's a, you know, they look like deer, but with really long, straight horns, and baboons all over the place. I mean, you just were seeing so much wildlife in the desert. And so, you know, from a perspective of what does it look like, it ranged everything from, like I was mentioning, the Fish River Canyon, it looks like the Grand Canyon, to giant sand dunes, to areas that I would say would look something like a savanna almost, you know, like a really dry grassland. And then as we made our way into the north, as we made our way towards the Angolan border and exited the Namib Desert, it was, there was one part, honestly, it almost looked like home, like on a really dry summer, you know, and it was very green with lots of wildlife, tons of birds. So it just constantly changed.
And what's the message that you want to send from this? What do you say to the kids who are following along? And what would you say to runners like me? Because we've talked before about all these amazing things that you do, most of which are beyond the reach or capacity of people, ordinary runners. But I know that for you want people to know that for whoever you are and whatever your goals are, that you can achieve them. It doesn't have to be running across a desert somewhere, but it can be something else, right?
Exactly. I mean, I'd love to take a trip into space and land on the moon. I mean, that's probably not going to happen, but that would be like the ultimate adventure, right? But it's finding adventure, and it's relative. And I think that, you know, if anything, it's saying to young people and showing them, hopefully getting them really excited through our adventure and our expedition, and the fact that we're pushing ourselves as hard as we can every day. I mean, really, I literally could not take another step every day. Every day ended with giving it everything that we had, and then a proper recovery protocol so that we could go back out and do it again the next day. And the message would be to young people, you know, challenge yourself and push yourself and get out there and explore and find your own adventure. And don't be afraid to push yourself a little bit and take a challenge, because it's in every single person on this planet to be extraordinary if they want to be, you know, in their own version.
Yeah.
So really, it's just, that's what I hope they get excited when they see this expedition and they say, hey, you know, that's pretty rad. I'd love to do something like that, you know, and get out and do something. And it, like you say, it doesn't have to be running across the Namib Desert, but it can be, and maybe it is, or maybe it's something else, right? But it's just, you know, giving it a try, giving something a try that you're passionate about.
I think the other message that's important is, and we've talked about this before, Ray, but you put so much planning and thought and preparation into what you do. It's not about just showing up somewhere and running 50 or 60 or 70 kilometers a day and seeing where it takes you. You do a lot of front-end work and logistics, and you prepare physically, you prepare the plan, you prepare the team. So there's a lot of that in this as well, isn't there?
Yeah, so logistics are like a year and a half to 2 years, as I was mentioning, for this project. But, of course, I was on an Arctic project last year. So physical preparation is 1 year. So it's 1 year dedicated to one goal. And for sure, that's a story that we try to tell and the story that we share through social media, you know, as part of the story development of the expedition. And the hope is that anybody who's following along will dial into that, and young people especially, will get that idea that, you know, some of the greatest things that we want to do are sometimes the most difficult things that we do.
Absolutely. Now, are there any stories that that you want to share from the experience? Any surprises? Any great moments? Give us a sense of what the running was like and what you encountered along the way.
Well, the terrain constantly changed, and you know, Stefano and I would say we'd have these. We had a lot of sort of micro goals during the expedition. Like sort of, you know, you have these. You know what it's like. You're training for a marathon or a 10K, and you have a goal time that perhaps you tell your friends about. But inside, if you're training for a time, if that's your goal, you have sort of a secret goal, you know. And so we sort of had like these little mini secret goals during the expedition. Crossing the Fish River Canyon unsupported was one, because that was a monumental challenge in the middle of summer when it was 50 degrees Celsius. But you know, we would have the best laid plans. One of our other goals was to have a couple of 100K days. And we realized that the terrain that we were running in and the heat and the wind and the elevation and the constant unexpected stuff that was coming up, that probably it just wasn't going to happen. And if it did, we wouldn't be recovered to get up and do it again the next day. Cause it was tough. So it was like redefining what our goals were on a day-to-day basis and just trying to push ourselves to 60 a day, you know, to get it done. So, I mean, you know, some of the more, you know, striking moments for us were, you know, being away from our team at one point in the latter part of the expedition, which is when we were actually seeing our team more frequently. In the beginning part of the expedition, we were seeing them, you know, every 25, 20, whatever K, we would see them 15K. But towards the end, we were seeing them more frequently, especially since we were in lion territory, and we hadn't seen them in a little bit. And we looked down on the ground and we saw our first lion track. And that kind of like spooked us a little bit. We were like, you know what? We got to be super careful in this environment, you know? And so, obviously, we talked with our team and made sure that they were much closer by in the area that they could be. And it was in a canyon as well, a different canyon. So, you know, that was definitely a memorable moment. I think the most memorable moment, that was the very last day when, you know, we visited a school in a remote northern community called Etoto, and we visited with students there and shared some of the stories from the expedition, which they loved because there was photos of their own country that they'd never seen before, right? So that was really cool. We were able to bring the laptop and show the photos, but also showing them photos of Canada and showing them photos of the Arctic and snow, and they were just blown away. They couldn't believe it, you know, seeing photos of wildlife in the Canadian Arctic, which is so contrasted from, you know, Namibia. So that was, the kids loved it. And that was really exciting for us.
Very
you know,
cool.
We were excited that they were excited about it. So, you know.
Very cool. Well, Ray, you've done so many of these expeditions that you almost make them look ordinary by your standards, but they are anything but. They continue to be extraordinary. I've watched some of the videos on your Facebook page and followed you along this journey, and it's just incredible what you do. Congratulations on another hugely successful expedition and for inspiring so many young people and old people too, like me. And thanks once again for being on the show this week.
Well, thanks, buddy. And I would encourage everybody to get out and check our website, transnamibia.com. There's a section, the blog section, is all educational videos that did not appear on social media. They were created in partnership with Canadian Geographic Education, and we were sort of creating them for them and for the schools that follow their program. So if you get a chance, you can see and learn firsthand about many elements of the Namib Desert through those videos that we created.
Very cool. Thanks a lot, Ray.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark. We'll chat soon.
That's Ray Zahab of Impossible to Possible, also iRun's Runner-in-Chief. And that's it for our show this week. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.